This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
So we go straight on to our next presenter. Jeremy, are you within? Hello. So we have Jeremy Anderson from Guide Dogs Australia. He's the National Policy and Government Liaison project manager?
Advisor,
thank you. And he's going to... And he's going to talk about to us about something that those who are participants of the NDIS are probably very interested to know more about, update on dog guide warranties under the NDIS. Jeremy, happy for you to start whenever you're comfortable.
All right. Is this on? Yeah. Hi. Okay. So Jeremy's my name. National Policy and Government Relations at Guide Dogs Australia. Just to give you a bit of background about myself, I've been at Guide Dogs Australia coming up to 3 years. Prior to that, I worked in a range of senior advisory roles at state and federal government level. That included, just prior to Guide Dogs Australia, two years at the NDIA. So I can give you a little bit of insight about what that organisation's like. I'm just going to run through about the NDIA and the reviews that it's conducting and the warranty issue. But if we've got time at the end, I'm happy to take any questions as well without notice around my role at the Guide Dogs organisation as well, if you want to. So the NDIA, it's an interesting organisation to work in and with. In many respects, I say they are a necessary but untrustworthy friend. The role of the NDIA is really important and transformative. I have to say, from my perspective, there's been so much good that's come out of it, but also there's so much anxiety and frustration that emerges both as a provider organisation and I'm sure for people that are participants. It's the issue within, particularly when we talk about dog guides, and sorry if I keep saying guide dogs, but that's who I work for, is that we've introduced a new partner into the process of you getting a dog guide. With that said, the issues around the NDIS becoming a partner are good ones too, but what they are looking for is good evidence and a solid process for them to make a reasonable and necessary decision about whether or not someone needs these supports or something more appropriate. What we've found though is that after 10 years of the NDIA in operations, we still aren't sure what we're meant to be doing. When I say that, I don't mean that for participants of the scheme. That's for providers as well. And you know, there's a lot of times where people might want to point the finger at the NDIA, but certainly there's ways that as providers in the assessment process we go through to make sure that we select the right dog, but also select the right candidates and give the right evidence for you to put in the assessments for approval that could be done better. So this review that's going on at the moment is welcomed. I mean, it is 10 years since the scheme has originally started. But the opportunity to sit down with the NDIA and co-design an outcome that is suitable for participants but also providers is essential. And with the NDIS going through that review process that was announced last year, parallel to that, of course, they announced that they would reconvene NDIA Dog Guide Advisory Group. That started in September last year with the objective to look at participant experience and provider experience, but also to address issues around pricing and the warranty issue, which is a very important aspect to being provided with a good dog guide. The original meeting in September had great expectations of resolving all these things and implementing them by June this year. That hasn't occurred, but But we are moving fairly expeditiously now. I think the beginning of the year was really an opportunity for everyone to understand what each other's needs were, to really define the scope of the work that needed to be done, and there is a lot of work involved in it, and then really set forward a timeline to get things resolved. With that said, the process now is coming to a really critical period where, as a result of the work that's been done around looking at the assessment process, where the NDIA will be about to announce a trial that would probably take place even as early as this month, but certainly by the beginning of next month. That assessment process will involve a streamlined application for service providers that sign up to a memorandum of understanding. That's still being designed at the moment. However, the trial will take place in the interim to make sure that these two assessment planning tools are appropriate. There'll be two assessment pathways. One will be for someone that is applying for a dog for the first time, and the second one will be for an experienced handler who needs to replace a dog guide. With those two streamlined places, what would happen is a provider would sign up to a level of service provision that that the agency sees as preconditions to being a preferred supplier, and they will, for want of a better word, market that on their website of who these preferred suppliers are that have signed up to it, and they will be put on an assessment pathway that deals with the application processes faster, with the ideal goal being that you will be matched with have your assessment process and your matching process much more seamless, the payment process seamless, and it all happens in a much more orderly fashion than what's going on at present. I think in some circumstances, I have dealt with applications escalated to me that have taken in the order of 12 to 16 months, which is totally unacceptable. It's totally unacceptable for a whole range of reasons, let alone the agency declaring their own participant service guarantees. So hopefully this new measure will work. I think from the participation from all the guide dog providers and dog guide providers that it's been done in good faith. The pathways appear to be much more sounder and much easier to provide evidence, and in turn where you need to retire a dog or replace a dog, those processes should involve not having to jump through all the hoops again about proving your disability again. So we will, over the next 3 or 4 months, as part of that advisory group, continue to meet and look at how this trial's taking place. For you, if you are an NDIA participant that has to go through this process, you probably won't notice much of a change. It's for the providers to make sure that they offer these service standard provisions, and secondly, for them to ensure that these assessment processes are filled in correctly. For the NDIA, it'll be a lot more different for them. Instead of the planner delegate making the decision, their pathway will go through to a technical assessment branch, where it usually does anyway. A planner might usually get the assessment and send it on to someone with more experience to make a decision. So these will all now be funneled through to one spot for them to assess and work out what is good evidence, what are the good outcomes, and start to measure what success looks like around this funding model. From there, new operational guidelines will probably become available around December. There are a range of issues, key issues for the NDIA and the providers to consider and make some decisions around. The first one, which has been resolved, was a lot of discussion around what is an acceptable service life for an assistance animal. There is a range of data, both internationally and local, about what service life looks like, and giving consideration and getting the NDIA to understand that a dog is very different to a wheelchair. They are living beings, and they have different needs, and they have and they're used different ways. But the agency had an expectation that a dog service life should be 8 years. On top of its training, you were looking at about 10 years. To make that a mandated position as an average is just a bridge too far for all the providers and for the dog. So they have decided to modify their position to 6.5 years, which is a fantastic outcome, I think, for everyone involved.
Sorry,
that's okay.
For yeah. A microphone, please, if you want to make a comment.
I had a really quick thought.
Yeah.
Or can you keep it till... Either way, we get a microphone to you.
Sorry,
or
coming.
You can keep it
Thanks.
To the end.
Sorry, my brain moved.
That's okay.
So if my calculations are correct, that would put dog at roughly eight and a half?
Generally 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, 18 months. So
yeah.
Six, yeah. Yeah. Eight and a half years.
Yes.
Correct. And as part of the planning cycle, there would be an expectation that when the dog gets to about 6 or 7 years of age, there would be an automatic plan review that would be around the replacement of the dog guide. So that age, service age, has been resolved. The other area, of course, is there's two. One is around what is the future pricing for a dog. That is something that will be ongoing for a little bit of time yet. It doesn't need to be resolved as part of this whole process, but we are looking at different pricing models and scenarios. It's a very large fee for an NDIA-funded dog to be paid, and there's a range of expectations that are expected, and I think there was a range of expectations prior to the fee for people that aren't funded by the NDIA around the performance of a dog guide. So in working towards these new service standard provisions, one of those areas is on warranty. And in relation to warranty, if you don't already know, under Australian consumer law, if it is an NDIA funded dog, you are covered by warranty.
Yep.
What that means is that a person or an organisation, a provider that gives you a NDIA-funded dog has to, under Australian consumer law, provide you with a warranty around what that dog will do. So that's an expectation of particular service levels that the dog will be able to meet. If it fails to meet those service levels, then you are in a position to ask that provider to remedy that situation, whether that be through further training, replacement, or a refund. So that warranty provision has had some interesting consequences, because while every provider has to give that to you, they can't exclude it, there are a range of scenarios that no one ever assumed would be covered. There was all sorts of unintended consequences of how to talk about what a warranty should cover. Under Australian consumer law, there are minimum standards for that, but it is also a great grey area about how you interpret what your obligation should be and what we should cover in every single circumstance. Some of those circumstances can be well beyond the control of a provider to be able to give you around what the dog should or shouldn't do, and under Australian consumer law that becomes called it's like a exclusion, but it's very hard, it's a very grey area. So what the NDIA has done through these new service provisions that they want providers to sign up to is say these conditions will be mandated within the service guidelines. So that will take away any element of confusion that exists currently about what a warranty is. So with that in mind, they've now at the stage, as I mentioned before, that the priority will be towards the end of this month some communication back to the providers and in turn to the community about these next steps with the testing of the new assessment templates and then a finalisation of these service standard provisions that include the warranties. So there will be some more negotiations, I suspect, but all in all, I think from what I'm seeing from the provider group so far, there's a strong in principle support to the finalisation of a memorandum of understanding around what those guidelines would be. I'm happy to take some questions about the NDIA and this process, also around Guide Dogs Australia and some of the work that we're doing in relation to this and other matters, but I'll leave it to the floor if you want to canvass any ideas or concerns or questions.
Do we have any questions for Jeremy?
This is Denise.
Hang, have you got a microphone?
Yep.
Yep.
Recently, with a new plan, I've had to have justified the routine reviews that go on every year, every 6 months. And I'm just wondering, the routine reviews, could they be included in the original cost of the dog rather than adding to the cost of the dog so that they're already covered? Because I had to ask, yeah, for the new plan, ongoing dog, I had to justify it. And yet, for us, it's routine and compulsory. So
you were asked...
Can it be included in the initial fee?
Right. It could certainly be considered as part of this new funding model. What I would say, though, is that the NDIA is not looking to increase the price for a dog up front. So it would really restrict us as providers in where we put that assessment fee. But I take your point, and it's something that needs to be articulated with the NDIA when we come up to discussing the price points and scenarios that they want to look at. So sorry, I don't have a definitive answer about that yet, but it's certainly something we'd look at.
Hi, thanks. This is Murray Stone. I've noticed that the way planners consider dog guides as... they're not considering them as mobility aids. They're using them more as replacements for support workers. In other words, that support hours are being cut because people have got guide dogs. And so, you know, what's Guide Dogs Australia doing about sort of getting some consistency in that?
Yep. We have seen a range of scenarios where participants applying for dog guides... have to trade between disability support workers and having a dog. We've brought that to the attention of the agency. They don't give us a particular answer, but we do know that there's a particular number of hours where that will trigger whether or not a dog is economic versus other support. So, no, it's not. And we're working through that. We're trying to get a resolution to that. A lot of it's around this assessment process and finalising what evidence and what good evidence looks like and measuring it, what success looks like through outcomes for the individual by having a dog guide. So that's a work in progress. Yeah.
Yeah, hi, it's Nicole. And I just sort of, well, 2 points, but my first point is, yeah, I want to second what Murray's just said. Because, I mean, I'm on my third dog. And, I mean, my dog's brilliant, okay, but he can't actually drive me anywhere. He can't read stuff. He can't read my mail. He can't help me cook a meal. He can't help me hang out the washing. I'm sorry, I don't have one of those newer models of dog guides. So unless GDA is going to get the business of creating that kind of a level of a dog guide, I personally don't see that. I see a dog guide and a support worker as complementary, not either or. And I think it's very problematic. Mm. Could GDA try and explain this to the NDIA? I mean, maybe you need to use really small words. I don't know. I like to try and get it through to them. Because I don't want to be in a position where I have to choose between whether or not I have a support worker or a dog guide. Because I just that's really unfair. I think, flat out.
Yep.
And then my other thing I'm going to say to GDA, this might not be very popular, GDA, I'm sorry if it's not, but personally, I equate having a guide dog as a car. Like, to me, it's the closest thing I'm ever going to get to as having a car. Now, I don't know any car yard Australia-wide where you pony up and give them $50,000 or more, buy a car, you drive out the lot with it, but the car yard still owns the car. I'm sorry, that doesn't happen. So why are schools going, we'll take all the NDIS funding, but by the way, we still own the dog, we'll tell you who you can use for follow-up, we'll tell you where this dog retires, we'll tell you what you can feed it, we'll tell you where, what flea and tick, we'll tell you blah, 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 blah. Like, to me, I'm sorry, but I feel like the schools kind of can't have it both ways. Like, if you're going to take the money, release the dog to the client. Yep.
Sorry, Nicole, can you use your microphone, please?
Okay. Thanks, Nicole. On your first question, around that planning assessment, we understand the complementary nature that exists there, but I think that gets back to the original issue, which is how inconsistent the NDIA is about making its planning determinations, and everyone will get different decisions, even though everyone wants to compare too. So that inconsistency is being resolved through this new assessment pathway. The new assessment pathway, as I said before, you don't need to worry about. It goes to the back of house of the NDIA, and all assessments are dealt with by one team, the technical assessment team, that will look at it. So from there, the expectation through this review period is to understand what expectations the NDIA have of providers and individuals about the assessments and what evidence they need, but also us being able to understand what we need to provide them and showing what those outcomes are. So that area I think is really important. On your second issue around ownership, I appreciate that might appear to be a contentious issue, but ownership of the dog at this stage remains a very important principle for guide dog organisations. Why? Because...
Nicole, please, microphone.
There are a range of obligations on guide dog organisations to ensure that the dog's welfare. So we need to be assured of that. We also have obligations to the NDIS, the NDIA, around the warranty provisions that we have to supply. In relation to that, to give those guarantees, we need to have some level of ownership of the dog. Now, in future, things may change, but that's not my decision. That's something that the guide dog organisations would have to consider and the broader provider organisations.
Sorry, are there any other questions?
Hi, it's Kathy. I'm just asking because I've been in a bit of a bind for quite some months and it's semi-resolved. And I'm wondering whether this new process will assist people that got into a similar dilemma to myself or in the future may get into a similar dilemma. My guide dog, unfortunately, had to immediately emergency retire in January. He's been deemed with epilepsy, unforeseen medical event, on medication, and because of that, and by the way, he's doing really well, thanks guys, on medication and deemed immediately not suitable as a working dog. Nobody's fault, absolutely no provider. All vets have said a totally unforeseen event. It's not a thing that is passed down from generation to generation, just unfortunate circumstances. However, when we went to the NDIS to get a replacement dog, because the warranty supposedly was 8 years and my dog didn't complete the 8 years, they've actually given me the funding for the dog, half the funding for the dog. So I'm not quite sure whether I got the top half or the bottom half. Not quite sure. So in that dilemma, this new system in place, will that look at that situation? Because I had specialist vets and a whole string of vets saying very clearly to the NDIS this was an unforeseen event, medical event, nobody's fault, and yet for some reason the provider got slogged half the cost of the new doll. And I don't know whether that's morally correct or whether that's right under the warranty, or I just don't see that that's okay in a circumstances like that. And I'm wondering whether you guys are going to look into that sort of thing. Because for me, as a participant, the stress factor was horrendous, and the drawn-out situation, which I heard you saying, please correct me if I'm not wrong, you said that the new system is going to go to a new section of the NDIA, some section that relates technical something. Yep. That was the section that made the decision for me, that they that I would receive half the cost. So how are we going to deal with that?
Kathy,
thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. You raise what's a really good example of how the NDIA and providers have been dealing with this at the moment, and it's not, it hasn't been dealt with very well. You know, this is where the NDIA will lean back and send you advice to say you should go to your provider because they've got obligations under Australian consumer law to provide a warranty and should replace the dog. And the dilemma under the law as a provider is if a dog is, say, 4 years of old and has something that can't be screened for and has epilepsy and, just out of nowhere has to be retired, under Australian consumer law, the letter of the law, the black and white, are we obliged to give a warranty for that? And the answer is no. So there's been a range of issues that have come forward from the NDIA where they've said the dog hasn't served 8 years, you have to replace the dog free of charge. And we've said, well, you know, under the law, we actually don't. So there's been a bit of a standoff there. Now, what you saw there is what pragmatically happens. Unfortunately, it sounds like it probably, well, for one, created a lot of anxiety and frustration for you because you had to go through that process. But secondly, just the process itself is really clunky, and this new process should just alleviate all of that because it defines what the service level provision is. And in that circumstance, the dog has to have a service life of 6.5 years. If, let's just say 8, so I can do the maths real quick. It only did 4, 50%. So you would get a replacement dog from that provider, and they would meet the funding of 50%, and the NDIA would meet the other 50%. Everyone just moves on in terms of that funding arrangement.
It's Jenny Maloney. I just wanted to make a point about that warranty, and as you just mentioned, it would be from the same provider. The issue is, Kathy's situation was unique in one sense, but there's often times when that warranty is deemed appropriate for other reasons too, and you're restricted to go back to the same provider. Otherwise, if you returned your Ford and you decided you wanted a Toyota, you'd be able to go to a different organisation. In this situation, after 3 years of perhaps, trying to have your organisation support you and feel that you're not getting support and that then you've traded in the dog.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, you're now forced to go back there after a whole lot of antagonism, and that there be a problem as well.
Well, if there was a problem with the provider, and there was a pro rata consideration under the new guidelines, that pro rata, the refund would go back to the agency that would then be issued to another provider.
I think we have time for maybe one more question.
Hi. Thank you very much. It was a really interesting talk you've done. It's Blind John anyway. I was given a dog probably about 6 months ago, and it probably shouldn't have been a guide dog in the first place, and I persevered for 12 weeks and it failed. I went to the provider and said it wasn't suitable, and I actually had to do some legal threats to get the provider to agree to replace it, which they did. But they then proceeded, agreed the $50,000 dog would be replaced, but the $20,000 training fee, they still charged my NDIS package another $20,000 for another lot of training, which I thought was a little bit wrong, and I sort of had a bit of a problem with that. But anyway, it was done. My question is, are they the amount of the dogs, are they still going to use the $50,000, or have they come up with a set figure now, or are they doing anything with that?
The pricing model's being considered. I think the agency, we hear a lot about the agency's discussions around financial sustainability, and of course a dog guide is a lot of money. So of course they're looking at how that funding should be paid. And in turn, they're looking at ensuring that the quality of the dog and the service provided is appropriate. So in that regard, they're looking at funding models that may well still be around, still the $50,000, but also looking at perhaps some sort of staggering of that payment to ensure that you're getting what you paid for.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. I'm imagining there's a lot more questions. I'm not sure if you're here for the rest of the afternoon.
I've got to catch a plane, but
quick run.
but we've got Russ here from Guide Dogs Victoria, head of client service and dog services from Guide Dogs Victoria. So I encourage you to introduce yourself. He's down the back. He's down the back. So if you wanted to talk to him, but I can tell you that I love a phone call or an email, whatever. I'm happy to give my phone number. Yep. So I'm happy to have my phone number circulated. I really appreciate anyone that wants to discuss their experiences. They are all valuable experiences that I can tell you I present to the NDIA and the minister and the minister's office, and I've got to say that I feel that the minister is a very supportive person, not only of the NDIA but also of our sector more broadly, and he's really encouraging with the work that he's doing to try and get a resolution to some of these issues. And I would say in that light, all of us are trying to do the right thing and get a good result so that you don't have to continually bang your head against the wall with the NDIS.
Direct ear to or speak to Minister Shorten. Go see Jeremy. Thank you so much, Jeremy, for your presentation. Okay. Just a small gift.
Thanks for having me.
A token of our appreciation.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?